Okay, well, today we have Peter Lazar. I have been wanting to talk to him because he was a president of Co-Housing Association of America. He lives in co-housing for a long time, and he has built a co-housing community. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Carol.
So first, I would just want to know, how did you find out about co-housing and what made you decide to try it out? And wasn't that like 20 years ago?
Yeah, it was. So it was in the early 2000s that there was actually an attempt to build co-housing in Charlottesville, which is the town of my alma mater. And my wife Molly and I were living in Northern Virginia at the time. And we were visiting Charlottesville because we were looking to buy a house and potentially move away from the crazy DC area. And I was traveling at the time, but she was there. And at the time there was a magazine called The Hook. So some people who've been around for a while might know it. It's like Seville, but it was around for a long time. It was like one of these weekly magazines. And they were reporting on a failed co-housing project. And you know how with marketing, you're supposed to have 7 touches before somebody really pays attention and does something. So this first time that we heard about co-housing, I really didn't know what it was about. And the article didn't even say really what it was about. All the articles said was that these people in off of St. Charles Street were trying to build this co-housing neighborhood, and it failed. And they were interviewing a neighbor and who lived there where the co-housing was going to be built nearby there. And the neighbor said something like, "I'm glad it failed. I didn't want no tree-hugging, grocery cart-pulling, Volvo-driving Vermont wannabes in my neighborhood anyway." And Molly sent a link to me for that, and she thought it was really funny. And I thought, hey, I responded back and say, hey, I want to be a tree-hugging, Volvo-driving, grocery cart-pulling Vermont wannabe. And that was it. So, but it didn't say anything about what is co-housing or any of that kind of stuff. So, you know, so then a couple of years went by, and then I read in the UU World magazine this article about co-housing from this woman, Joni Blank, who lived in Oakland, California. And so she was writing about a day in the life of co-housing. And actually, Molly forwarded that to me also. She found this thing. And we read it, and it was just so appealing sounding to us. So we were living in Manassas, Virginia, which is the suburbia of suburbia. It's like the most spread out, you know, our daughters were like 1 and 3. And, but, you know, we it was hard to find friends or neighbors, and we were commuters, and you didn't know your neighbors and stuff. And this was like, I walk out your door and you chat with this neighbor about this, and you remember to return the tool for a neighbor for this. And it was like a day in her life, and I thought it was really great. And but I happened to be going to Oakland actually 3 days later. So I emailed Joni and I asked her, hey, can I come over and see your co-housing neighborhood? And she said, sure. So I came over. And I visited, and it was only for like half an hour. And I saw her, and I spoke to some neighbors, and they were indeed living the lifestyle. And I thought, this is it. This is what we've got to do. And I called Molly and I said, we've got to do this. You know, this would be really great. And so that's how I found out about co-housing.
And then didn't September 11th have something to do with any of it too? Or that just was more of a push? Because you were in the Washington area.
That's true. That's actually why we were looking to move away from the Washington area. We were concerned, Ava was born just after September 11th, and we were concerned, you know, will there be more terrorism or whatever? So we thought, you know, it'd be nice to move to Charlottesville, get away from the D.C. area. So that was part of it, for sure.
Okay. And then, So you found an actual co-housing that was being built at the time or finishing being built, and you moved in about 2002 then, 2003?
No. So that was 2005.
Oh, and, it was a while.
So the Joni Blank article was in 2004, and then in 2005, Molly and I found out that one of our friends that actually couldn't make it to our wedding because he was hiking the Appalachian Trail lived in this neighborhood in Blacksburg, Virginia, Shadow Lake Village. And we said, okay, we'll check it out. We'll learn about co-housing there. So we can't move there because our family's in Northern Virginia and or in Williamsburg, Molly's family. And so we have no family there, but we'll learn it. We'll learn about it. And so we were all at that point already, we had started our talking with neighbors about trying to create something in Charlottesville. So we were already starting an effort in Charlottesville at that time. So we went down and we had met a bunch of people, and there were some houses they were still building, and had this wonderful time, and our kids were just running around, and we had a kind of a bonfire, which actually ended up being where we had bought our house. And then the story then, what happened was, already we committed that we're not going to buy a house there because it's not practical. And so we kind of drove back in silence. And so all the way back to Manassas from Blacksburg. And then the first half of the night, Molly was awake and thinking, you know, how am I going to convince Peter that we have to move in there and just buy a house? And then the second half, she woke me up when she got up, and then I was up the second half of the night trying to think how I could convince her that we'll buy a place. So anyway, in the morning, we just, you know, looked at each other and said, yeah, let's do it. Okay, we'll buy a house.
Aww.
And so the next week, we had a contract on a house there. So we're kind of impulsive.
Well, hey, that's great. Well, you had already looked into it, and you had been swayed anyways. So was Shadow Lake pretty much finished? Like, you were one of the last houses?
Yeah, we were. There were several houses after ours, but we were amongst the last several original houses that were built.
Okay. And then you liked it so much. How did you get involved with Co-Housing Association of United States and become the president?
So there's more. I was working on that, and then working on the predecessor to Emerson Commons in Charlottesville, or Crozet, actually. And so got a group of neighbors together, and we started working on trying to create a co-housing neighborhood. And so that happened well before I did any of the national co-housing stuff. And basically it failed. And the reason it failed is pretty simple to say, with just one word, actually one number, which is 2009. So we went out to try to finance it and build it. We already had 19 home buyers at that time. And in a normal situation, it would have worked. But at that time, if you remember, the real estate market crashed, and even somebody with six-figure salaries couldn't buy a house because nobody was lending to anybody, you know, let alone a builder to build anything.
Mm.
So the whole thing crashed and everybody lost their money. We lost our money. And the land, there was a developer partner, and so they basically got control of it. And so that kind of stopped there. And then in 2013, Molly and I bought back the property from them with intent of building co-housing neighborhood. And at that time, I was just saying that in 2013, Molly and I went and bought the property back from the development partner. And so it was after that that I started to get involved nationally as well. So I'd been living in co-housing then for a while, since 2005. I was building a co-housing neighborhood, and I was really living the life and just realizing that this would be a great thing to just try to get it to spread across the United States. And so I got very active. I was on the board for a while, and then I became president, and I attended and helped run a number of like national co-housing conferences.
So what makes you want to spread the word? What makes you a co-housing pastor of sorts?
I think that co-housing is just one form of living where you're living in a community and in relation with your neighbors. There are others, and even before, I really didn't have a specific word. It was just basically a neighborhood or a village, and that's the way everybody lived. You know, you lived in a village and you knew your neighbors, and hard times, you you helped your neighbors out, and that was the normal way of living. And I think it's really since the era of the automobile, and then even worse with the internet, and then two earner couples where both parents are gone, that we got this sense of isolation. And so I think that really, I see this as just a much more normal way. We as humans are kind of meant to interact with our neighbors. We're meant to socialize with people and just interact with people, not to be isolated separately. We're just not built that way. And so it's really kind of, I see that it's something that in other parts of the world where a lot of people still live like that. In the U.S., it's more accidental. You might be living in a neighborhood where it's very functional. You open up your fences between your backyards, and the kids runs back and forth, and you have cookouts, and you interact with your neighbors, and those things happen accidentally. But it's really not the norm anymore. And I see this as, I saw it as kind of a second career life mission to try to get back to that, which I think is much healthier and prevents loneliness and is just a better way to live.
Okay. So now, if you are happily living in a co-housing community, what made you want to build the one in Charlottesville?
I mean, for one, I thought that we would ultimately end up living there because my daughters were growing up here, and we kind of assumed they would go to college and go to UVA since I went to UVA. And so now my eldest is at University of Richmond, and my youngest is probably going to end up going to Stanford. She just got accepted. And so that's not happening. So we're still living here. But that was kind of, we thought we'd move to Charlottesville, which I just love the town. And so that was partly why there. And then I also thought it would be a good place to create it if I was going to do this as a second career, because it's a really progressive area. There's a lot of like-minded people, and I thought it would just be a good place to create a co-housing neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, Charlottesville, it's sad now that the name brings up the hate and everything that happened in August 2017. But my impression has always been everybody is a tree hugger, and I don't know what grocery shopping cart dragging is, but most of Charlottesville, if you look at the writing and everything that comes out of Charlottesville, and there were actually more people against the Right to Unite then, or whatever it was called. So that's, I think you're right. It's a perfect place for co-housing.
Were any of those people even from Charlottesville? I thought they were from
Unfortunately, Ohio, two of the, because I've looked into it, my sister went to UVA.
Yeah.
Two of the founders of the whole march or whatever it was, they were from there. But I think they graduated in the 80s and... So unfortunately two of them, but yeah, most people like David Duke and people came from way outside. And
I thought the vast majority of everybody came from elsewhere because it was in reaction to the city council wanting to take down the statue.
Right.
That's how I remember. But anyway, I mean, Charlottesville has been a nuclear free zone since like the 1990s, and it's just a very, but, you know, I have to say that I think another really great place for co-housing is Texas. So when I was in the Co-Housing Association on the board, that was a kind of a push. There's a lot of people there, and there's a lot of people that would want that kind of lifestyle. And there, a lot of places there are indeed have this kind of suburbia and disconnectedness. And further, they don't have the as strict as zoning laws and whatnot there that makes it so difficult to build. That's why we don't see more of them in the United States.
The zoning laws is the main thing that's stopping.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges to building it. So, for example, in Denmark, now 15%—that's 15% of all new housing—is co-housing. It started in Denmark. co-housing in the 1970s. It was brought to the U.S. in the early 1990s. There was there was a book published about it in the late 80s, but the first ones were in the built in the 90s. But in Denmark, they make it a lot easier to build it. The United States, it's an uphill battle because everyone that I've heard of, it's contrary to a lot of the kind of zoning laws where people are trying to get you know, bigger houses and wide streets and the idea of the houses. Like one of the biggest challenges at Shadow Lake Village, where I'm living now, a big concession was that the houses are facing each a pedestrian area instead of a street. Mm-hmm. And just to make that zoning exception, as soon as you make something different than what's the standard, the neighbors can come out against it. And so, you know, the neighbors came out with pitchforks, you know, thinking that they'd be a bunch of barefoot hippies and, you know, whatever. Which was kind of silly because there's a lot of money to build houses. So people who do buy in co-housing are, unfortunately, it's above the price range for a lot of wonderful barefoot hippies because we don't have higher incomes that can buy a house or at least rent a house that size. Although, of course, they're smaller size. The houses are not necessarily that big. So, but that's making that exception makes it much more difficult, and lots of other challenges.
Hmm. So educating the local government and people about what it is, and yeah, co-housing is pretty much the opposite of commune as far as what it looks like and who is there, but it still is an intentional community where you have to make decisions together, but you have a lot of privacy. And
yeah, no, I think there's a lot of similarities to a commune in that there's a sense of community. People are making decisions by consensus, typically in co-housing neighborhoods and in communes. And there's common meals. So in co-housing, the common meals are not mandatory. It's not like you have all your meals, but you can join up for it, and it's wonderful. So that's one of the features of co-housing is that you got a beautiful common house, which is your clubhouse, and it's got a nice kitchen, and they typically have one or two or more meals per week. And sometimes they're potlucks, other times that you have something where there's you sign up, and in order to take part in it, you either have to cook or clean every few months. And so if you signed up to be a cook, then you'd be on a cooking team, and once every few months you'd be cooking. Mm-hmm. And I found actually for cooking for 50 people, it's kind of fun because you're cooking with some other people, you just have bigger pots and bigger things. And then you finish cooking and then other people clean up for you. But then most of the time, if you participate, then you just show up, you pay $5 for the materials, and you've got your lovely neighbors there and your neighbors' friends and good conversation, and the kids have the kids' table, and you just have good conversation. And it's just a really fun, nice thing. It's especially nice in the winter time when just now with COVID, it's been more challenging where, you know, we got to the point here at Shadow Lake Village where we opened up again for common meals, but now it's closed up again because of Omicron. But people are still, even at Emerson Commons, they're still through the winter having common meals. They're just doing it outside. So
very nice. So as a president, what did you do? You organized the meetings, the national conferences. What else does the president of the Co-Housing Association do?
Yeah, so this is the president of the board, and there's also a director, and there's staff that run this nonprofit organization. And so the director is the person that does a lot of the administrative kind of stuff. And so the president board is more policy setting, but it's also very hands-on in setting up conferences and being interviewed and just trying to get a word out about co-housing. So those are all, you know, different aspects.
Okay, very nice. So you got to meet a lot of people. Were you able to visit a lot of different co-housing throughout the nation to see what's similar, different?
Yeah, I think I've visited over 50 co-housing neighborhoods, nice, both in the U.S. and also Denmark.
Very nice. So did that help you in figuring out what you wanted to do in outside of Charlottesville? It's called, the town is Crozet, and it's called Emerson Commons. So how did that help you develop what you wanted in the one you were building? And was that exciting? Like, I'm president, I know a lot about co-housing, and now I get to build one.
Yeah, it was. So it was helpful to visit it and talk to so many people, because I really tried to get the best of. So I learned best practices and tried to implement those things there.
Wonderful. And I think one thing that's unique about Emerson is that it is developer-led. So you've dealt with the county, and I don't know if there were pitchforks, but you've dealt with some of that. And then people come to the plenary meetings, make policies before they moved in, and then just purchase a house with the bank and get to move in.
Yeah. So that helped in terms of the buyers, because the classic co-housing model in the United States has been that a group of people say, hey, let's do this. They don't have any experience. They're not professionals in it. And then, you know, they've got to figure out how to raise $10 million and build all these houses. And it's this, you know, 85% of them fail just because of all the hurdles and challenges to build it. And it becomes more and more difficult to do it because of just all of the financial and all the impediments to it. It's been slow going in the U.S. There's maybe about 160 built so far, but it's not everywhere just because of those impediments. And for Emerson Commons, it was developer-led, where I did all that stuff. And then so people just had to buy a house. And the other ones, the classic model is you put in $50,000 or $150,000 or something, and it's at risk until the thing gets built. And so you could lose all that money. So that also tends to discourage, especially people with limited income or young families. So a lot of the ones after the 2009, before 2009, there were more that were had founded by young families, including like Shadow Lake Village in the early 2000s. Because back then, you'd like put all your money in, and you know, nobody's ever lost it. People have forgotten about the Depression. Nobody's lost money in real estate. It only goes up, up, up. And after 2009, a lot of families with young children are realize the risks involved. So since then, it's much more likely that it'd be more retirement kind of age people that do it. And if you go to co-housing conferences nowadays, I'd say a lot of them are you see a lot of gray hair. But I'm proud of Emerson Commons and having so many families, maybe 60% families with young children, because in that case, they didn't have to put anything at risk. They just bought houses.
Mm-hmm. So tell us more, are there houses available, and what is Emerson Commons like?
Yeah, so there's 19 houses built. Ultimately, there will be 26, but there's already other neighborhoods who have only 19 houses. So it's a functioning community, and there's a house for sale, which is a resale right now. Somebody's moving. Other houses will be built in a couple of years. There's a potential for other resales or rentals that might come up. But it's a vibrant community with multi-generational. I mentioned young families, but another big segment are people that are working people, single or couples that are just working or retired, closer to retirement kind of people.
Very nice. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, if you want to easily move into a co-housing and become part of a community, it's a good opportunity. It's not urban, it's outside of Charlottesville. And you said the Appalachian Trail, so there's mountains. And you're going to build the other houses. What type of houses will they be, the new builds?
So actually, it's in the town of Crozet. So it's a town 9 miles from Charlottesville. So, and then it's also pretty close to the Appalachian Trail, Shenandoah Park in the other direction. And so the other houses, they'll be attached houses, either duplexes or triplexes, basically.
Okay. And there's some standalone houses there. And does it have a common house built already and any other amenities?
Yeah. So that's one of the things that really attracted me to this property and why I started it there was that it was just so beautiful. There's an old farmhouse that was built in 1890. That's the common house. It's very kind of beautiful, eclectic. It's been added onto over the decades since the 1890s. All kinds of interesting things, spiral steel staircase and different fireplaces and all kinds of interesting things. And it has actually an 1840s cabin that's attached to it as well, which is really cool. There's also a pool right next to it. So it's got a lot of really nice kind of features and a lot of nice old kind of plantings around it, which is nice. It's got mountain views and two creeks on the property. Wow. So I thought that was really attractive. 6.2 acres, which is a good size to have this many houses, and walkable to stuff. So all those things were right, kind of ideal for building a neighborhood like this.
Very nice. And that's usually with co-housing. I don't know when the common house is built, if that's, you know, while the houses are being built or not, but sometimes people have to wait, and a swimming pool is usually added on later. So the fact there's a pool.
Yeah, actually, swimming pools are rare.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Although in my neighborhood here, Shadow Lake, we built one after about 10 years. But this one, there was the house, there was an existing older house that became the common house. A lot of times it's that common house is built newly with the neighborhood or after some number of houses were built.
Very nice. Great. So now what type of people would do well living in co-housing? What have you found? Like, what type of people does it attract and do the best? Because it's a wonderful idea, but not everyone has the ability to figure out how to share the neighborhood.
I mean, I just find it, I have to say, I found it more normal than living in suburbia. So I don't think it's self-selecting. The kind of people that will buy a co-housing neighborhood are not the kind of people who will want to have big chain link fences and a Doberman and don't go near me. And you want to interact with you want to have some interaction with your neighbors, and you see the appeal of that. And I think that a trait that helps a lot are people that are easygoing, because if you've always want to get your thing, have things your way, and then you don't usually aren't as happy. A lot of times when you're living in a community, you think about what's good for the overall community, not always only what's good about you for you individually. So that kind of mindset is really helpful, I think, for living in a co-housing neighborhood. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who like the concept of co-housing and like the concept of people, but then they move into a place like that and can't get along with anybody because they always have to have their way. And those kind of people eventually move out. They kind of deselect out because they're not happy. Mm-hmm. But people that are generally easygoing, they do very well. And so I think that's a trait. One thing that's maybe counterintuitive is that you don't have to be an extrovert. In fact, when nationally we saw statistics, and it's certainly true when we did this at Shadow Lake Village, but we do a retreat and do a Myers-Briggs, about 60% are introverts. Mm. So more people are introverts than extroverts. And I don't know exactly why that is. Different people have theories, but some of it might be that I'm an introvert. I think people that like people, but also treasure their privacy are attracted to it. And people that, I think maybe if you're a big extrovert and you throw big parties and invite all your friends and do all that and put out on social media, your friends come, you cook up a storm, you have a great time, they all leave, you clean up. if that kind of thing is easy for you, then you're not, don't see the benefits of it. But I think if you're, if that takes a lot of energy and, you know, one of the things I find really nice as an introvert about living in a community is you just walk out your door and you see people hanging out. And if you want to hang out, you can socialize and chat with people. But if you want your private spaces, your private backyard, that's respected. So the privacy is there as well.
Okay. And then one last thing I was thinking about is you have the perspective of raising children in co-housing. Wow. So what was that like? How old were they when they moved in? And it sounds like your youngest is about 17 now. So what's it been as a parent and for them?
They were 1 and 3 when they moved in, mm-hmm. and now they're 17 and 20 right now. So, and they're both taking really kind of out-of-box approaches to what they're doing. And what I've seen now, it's really interesting because I'm living in a co-housing neighborhood that got started in the early 2000s. So there's a lot of kids that have grown up through here and gone off and done stuff. And they're way more likely than others to go study abroad or to have some kind of unusual career. I think that just all that outdoor play it just conditions them for creativity. That I think is less likely if you're a stay-at-home kind of kid. And I think that just a completely different view. I'm thinking back at when my daughters were something like 8 and 10 or so. They were here at Shadow Lake Village in Blacksburg. They and other kids their age, there were a bunch of them that went to this little summer camp thing that the county was having, and it was like a writing camp. And the teacher commented how different the Shadow Lake kids' stories were than other kids. Whereas other kids would have stories like, you know, I went and fought the beast with my sword and killed it, and I did this. The Shadow Lake kids was like, we worked together and we built a spaceship and we went to the moon or something. It was all stuff that they did together, you know.
Aww.
And so they just had grew up with kind of a different kind of outlook, which was really cool.
And a lot of parents are attracted because your children are exposed to other people and ideas. So did you see that they would, you know, learn this from this neighbor? And
very much, yeah. And also making friends with much older neighbors. So like when we moved here, my daughters had like a 75-year-old adopted grandfather, Michael, that taught them beekeeping and other cool stuff, and other neighbors that taught them knitting and read books. And it was kind of a win-win. There's a lot of families with young children, and there's some retired people, and some of the retired people, you know, they didn't want to move off to some place where it's all retired people around. They want to live in a community with kids as well. But you know, some of these parents are happy for, you know, to have some playtime with the older friends. So a lot of connections are made between the generations, which is really fun.
Right. Now, what are you looking forward to now that your daughters will be off in college? How do you think it'll be as empty nesters in co-housing?
Yeah, I think that'll be great. I think that I look forward to doing stuff with some of the kids here, and I'm sure I'll be involved in doing things.
So you have, and it's probably also from resale, because the first generation that bought the house before 2009, that was a big investment, but it seems like resales, you can get young families. So there's some younger families that have moved into Shadow Lake.
Yeah, that's what happened here. It's interesting. So Shadow Lake, a number of people moved out to either move just away, or they became so elderly they had to move to an old folks home. And then somehow here, maybe the price of housing is more reasonable, but it was mainly families with young children that have moved in. So this is a whole new crop of little kids here, which is really fun.
Very nice, very nice. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'll put a link where people can find Emerson Commons. And you're not the president now of Co-Housing Association, but I'm sure you're still involved. And they can learn and check it out someday. Do you give tours, I guess, if people are interested, or they can call and get a tour. Okay, okay.
Yeah, so just go to the website, look for Emerson Commons, and you can see on the website, you can sign up for tours. They happen once a month.
Okay, well, thank you so much.